From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond. Sunset.
Oakland, California. Concord, California.
Fairfield. Foothill.
Coming up, Pride revelers have a lot to celebrate this weekend. We'll go to festivities in Napa, where the city is working hard to embrace its LGBTQ community.
The marketing arm of the city does this Do Napa, so it's Do Downtown and Do Restaurants and Do Tasting Rooms, and now it's Do Pride.
Then we visit a local hangout for nudists in San Francisco's Castro District, where the practice is brewing controversy.
I think it's degrading to gay people, and I think all of these tourists that come and then go back to their hometowns associate gay people with perversion.
And we'll head to East Oakland, where an artist has transformed a dilapidated public housing complex into a work of art.
This is a notorious building. I remember when I was growing up, you didn't just walk in here.
We're showing our pride in all its forms today on Cross Currents. Many of you might remember this moment back in August of 2010.
I'm standing here outside the Federal District Courthouse at 450 Golden Gate in San Francisco, where word has just come down that Prop 8 has indeed been found unconstitutional.
A lot has happened for gay rights since then. The fact that the Supreme Court dismissed Prop 8 yesterday, in essence, upholds the lower court's ruling that deemed it unconstitutional. The Defense of Marriage Act was also struck down, and states across the country are adopting marriage equality laws, something that seemed radical only a few years ago. But for many of the people opposed to same-sex marriage, this is not good news. Remember, in 2008, a majority of Californians did vote to outlaw same-sex marriage. And yesterday, San Francisco's Catholic Archbishop Salvatore Cardaleon expressed his dismay about the Supreme Court's decision.
The court overturned a law that respects and enforces the principle that it's in the best interest of the child to be raised by their mother and their father. The state has an interest in protecting that right and supporting parents in raising their children.
But it looks as though public opinion is going in a different direction, supporting the rights of gay people to not only marry, but also compete in professional sports. The first NBA athlete to come out was Jason Collins just a few months ago, and now there's a PSA featuring famous athletes like the San Francisco 49ers' Vernon Davis.
It's time to support our LGBT friends, family, and teammates.
The timing of this new consciousness couldn't be better for the LGBTQ community, as cities across the nation prepare to celebrate Pride this coming weekend. One of those cities is Napa. With events ranging from Big Gay Trivia Night to Big Gay Golf to the Dinner and Drag Show, Pride in Napa has officially arrived. Napa's weekly party called Chef's Market took place this week with a twist. There are rainbow flags lining city light posts proudly announcing, "Do Pride." This is a relatively new side of Napa, and one that's still revealing itself to its own community. Even though the Pride Parade has taken place in Napa for the past 11 years, the town is still working to move past the perception of some that it's no safe haven for homosexuals. KALW's Teddy Lederer went to check out the Pride Week festivities in Napa. She brought back this audio postcard, beginning with the sounds of a Pride chef's market.
My name is Jill Teckel. I'm the mayor of the city of Napa, and it's T-E-C-H-E-L. We have this marketing. The marketing arm of the city does this Do Napa, so it's Do Downtown and Do Restaurants and do Tasting Rooms, and now it's Do Pride.
My name is Ian Stanley. I'm the program director of the LGBTQ Connection in Napa. We've been having Pride in Napa for about 11 years now.
I'm Chris Marks. I'm 18 years old, and I live in Napa, California. I've never really, seen anything about a Pride event going on in Napa before, so I feel like before this, it was, I never really knew stuff about, Pride, and I never really knew about, the gay community, that there was a gay community in Napa, and so knowing that there is and that there's Pride events, it just really helped me feel a lot more accepted and a lot more welcomed in this community.
China Rose Reed.
Yeah, we live here in Napa, so we love coming down just to see everybody and have something local to come to. But we wanted to make sure to come down tonight for sure to support Gay Pride in Napa. I mean, it's so awesome that the city council is supporting us the way that they are, and we just feel, you know, we wanted to be here to represent.
One of our main goals is awareness and visibility, because at our forums that we've had in the last 2 years, people have told us over and over that if they're LGBTQ people themselves, they don't know about what's happening here in the community, and the word's not really getting around. And folks who are not LGBTQ are also generally not talking about LGBT things.
The issue was, how can we be visible? How can we make the community more welcoming? How can we be sure people that live here and visitors feel like Napa is a welcoming place?
Even though Napa is only 1 hour north of the very progressive San Francisco Bay Area, that we're actually worlds apart in terms of where we're at and talking about this and in treating people the same.
Like, if you're a closeted gay, it's kind of hard, knowing, what you want, and knowing if there's someone out there that can help you, and just seeing the pride banners around town just makes the gay community feel a lot more welcomed.
Napa is very don't ask, don't tell. I've been in Napa since 1984 when I was in second grade, and I never saw anything gay, or the things I did hear or see. In third grade, we played Smear the Queer on the playground. So it was very clear that being gay for folks here in Napa was not a good thing, and most of the time people actually weren't even talking about it. So, there's no possibilities for me. It just didn't even seem like it could be something that was real. My favorite event so far for Napa Valley LGBTQ Pride this year was the drag show. It was at Villa Romano. I had no idea what to expect. I think because of the banners that have been put up all around downtown that the Tourism Improvement District put up have got a lot of visibility, and there was a huge turnout at Villa Romano. So a huge packed room, amazing drag queens, a burlesque performer, great food and great drinks, and it was just an incredible fun time last Friday night.
That story was produced by KALW's Teddy Lederer. Napa's Pride festivities ended this past Sunday, but there are plenty more happening around the Bay this weekend. Spread the word with us about where you're headed on Facebook and Twitter. We're KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. If you want to see a healthy dose of pride on any given sunny day, head over to the Jane Warner Plaza on the corner of Castro and Market Streets in San Francisco. It's better known locally as the Buff Stop because of the nudists who can be found letting it all hang out when it's warm. Earlier this year, they caused so much controversy with area businesses and residents that Supervisor Scott Weiner penned and passed an ordinance in February ordering nudists to cover their private parts in public. But as KALW's Leah Rose found out, that hasn't necessarily made much difference. And a note for our listeners. The following story contains mature subject matter.
It's a weekday afternoon, and I've just arrived at Jane Warner Plaza in the Castro. I'm here to meet a Buff Stop regular, a guy named Woody Miller. There's 15 or so people sitting around at little red metal tables talking and drinking coffee. After about 10 minutes, Miller shows up and he stands out. He surveys the scene from behind this long white ZZ Top style beard. He's wearing a pair of pink high top Converse, and except for a little black sack covering his man parts, he's standing there completely naked.
Yeah, I think that having this little black bag over my genitals draws more attention to them than if I was just naked. And, it's like I have to have this piece of fabric on to cover up a part of my anatomy that people have decided is just, for some reason, obscene and dangerous, and I think it's stupid.
As of February, public nudists in San Francisco must keep their privates covered. That followed another ordinance from 2011 that requires nudists to carry around something to sit on so their bare bums don't touch communal seats. Miller doesn't like it.
It's kind of silly because most of us, I would say 98% of us, were doing that anyway because it's just nudist etiquette. Basically, you do it because you want to protect yourself from whatever crunch might be on the seat before you sit on it with your body exposed to it.
As I sit talking to Miller, and by the way, he's sitting on a green handkerchief, I start to notice people creeping in to get a closer look and holding up their phones to take his picture. One woman wearing a big white Stetson hat isn't so curious. She's angry. She walks right up and tells Miller she's offended by seeing his bare body in public.
I find it to be personally appalling, and I believe that the penis is often used as a symbol of power, and I think that it's degrading to all women. I think it's degrading to gay people, and I think all of these tourists that come and then go back to their hometowns associate gay people with perversion and all sorts of sexual sins, and I think it's just, it's not the right thing. It's not a progressive thing, and it's not good for the gay community.
But not all women in the plaza are offended by the sight of nearly naked men.
I think they're terrific.
And I found, too, the women really liked the nudists better than the men liked them, which I find very interesting. Because the tourist women, they want their pictures with the nudist, and they just laugh and giggle and have a good time.
One of her table companions agrees.
I think they should have the right to do it. I just, you know, sometimes I like it a little prettier, a little classier. It's like sometimes the ones who shouldn't do and the ones who should don't. I think that everybody should have the right to express themselves.
But another does not.
This is not a free speech issue. We could have nude beaches. We could have designated areas. Why aren't they going somewhere else in the city? You know, give us a break. The gay community is already suffering tons of stereotypes. I don't really like being here. That's why I got my back turned away and stuff like that.
Obviously, the Castro is still divided over the issue.
And it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal, except in this neighborhood. And in this neighborhood, people are taking sides in there, you know, screaming at each other, oh, you're a bunch of Nazis. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Have respect.
I was curious what the tourists thought. They were easy to spot around the plaza. Most were hopping off the old-fashioned F-Market streetcars that drive up 17th right through the bus stop before turning down Market Street toward the Embarcadero. One tells me,
well, it's not the most pleasant view, but it's very San Francisco. And for us being from L.A., like, we're kind of having the whole San Francisco vibe. So it kind of makes sense, you know, just because we've heard of it. I've seen them before. It just adds to the flavor of San Francisco.
Around 4 o'clock, another nudist named Lloyd Fishback strolls into the plaza wearing a crocheted hat made to look like the head of an owl. He is deeply tanned, nearly hairless. And aside from his hat, he's wearing only a bright orange thong and flip-flops.
I'm here pretty much every day. After work, I'll come here and sit a while and do a little walk. It's just a way I can relieve stress from work.
When I ask Fishback how the ban has changed the buff stop, he sounds a little defeated.
It's like they just took your total freedom away. And now, it's a shame you got to be told how to dress and what to wear. This was probably the last city in the world you could do this, and now it's gone. Gone forever. We used to call it the buff stop, B-U-F-F. Now we could say, like, the semi-buff stop, I guess. We're semi-nude now.
Miller says he also felt repercussions from the ban, and he told me that the other nudists who hang out at the plaza are willing to cover up for now, but they refused to stop fighting.
We kind of all decided that we would do what we could to stay within the law, and we would wear the bare minimum, see if people still complained about that and see what happens with that. So that's what we're doing now. Plus, a small number of nudists got together and decided to fight the ban in court. So they're litigating a lawsuit at this point.
The nudists say they're looking forward to this weekend's Pride festivities, like the all-night street party Pink Saturday and the Pride Parade, an event in which full nudity is still legal. In San Francisco, I'm Leah Rose for Cross Currents.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Pride is spreading throughout the Bay Area this weekend, including a long-neglected block in East Oakland. On the corner of 77th and Bancroft, you'll find the Greenside Public Housing Project. Built in the 70s by the Oakland Housing Project, this complex became a center for drug use, crime, and violence. Some former residents describe it as a hellhole. Greenside was closed down 10 years ago, and it's remained vacant until now. And now, just weeks before its scheduled demolition, Oakland-born artist Isaac Brown, also known as Ice Life, transformed the building into an art installation. He designed it as an homage to the people who lived and grew up there. He calls it Brighter Than Blight, and people can see it through this weekend. KALW's Audrey Dilling takes us on a tour of the exhibit with the artist himself.
The game's over.
Before Ice Life became Ice Life, he was Isaac Brown. He grew up in East Oakland, probably playing Nintendo games like he is right now. We're in an apartment with these old video games, hat boxes, and vintage clothes. They're all carefully placed to capture what public housing units like this one must have looked like back in the day. That's because it's an art exhibit that Ice Life designed. He calls it
Grandma's House, where I wanted to honor grandmothers, because grandmas, you know, raise families in our communities. And so you walk through one of these units, and we've totally made it to look like a grandmother's house in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Grandma's House is the only furnished apartment inside the otherwise unoccupied Greenside housing complex. Life remembers Greenside from when he was growing up.
This is a notorious building. I remember when I was growing up, you know, Greenside, which is what this building is called, it was you didn't just walk in here. You had to know somebody to walk in here. There was a lot of drugs, a lot of violence here, a lot of homicides here on the site. And in time, it turned into and became worse and worse until it had to be condemned.
But now you can walk in here and see what life might have been like for people who lived here. In the kitchen, pots and pans are hanging on the walls. There's a bedroom with a small bed on a wooden frame and a soft, colorful quilt on top. There's even a photo of an older woman and her granddaughter hanging on the wall.
And I took this picture. One thing about building this exhibit, I was able to go around to current public housing sites and photograph families there, and it was really fresh.
Grandma's House is just one element of the installation Life created here called Brighter Than Blight. He took inspiration from the families he interviewed and created works of art throughout the Greenside complex. It includes a series of photographs around the plaza outside. Life leads me to the portrait of one African-American girl he met who has pigtail buns in her hair and is wearing a dress. She looks like she could be in first grade.
She's growing up maybe 40 steps from a prostitution stroll. And I think we really should consider, like, when we talk about housing as a human right, what are young people growing up around?
Brighter Than Blight explores the outside forces that can impact people growing up in public housing. But it also examines what's on the inside. Life points out bars that are covering the windows of the building.
I assume that these bars were here put up after the building was condemned. No, when people lived here, they lived behind those bars, you know? And I can't think of a bigger indictment of how inhumane people were living in this site, in sites like this across the country.
Those bars inspired the piece in the very center of the plaza. An armchair sits inside a cube of iron bars. It looks like a prison cell. Next to the chair is the following list.
Go to college, you're an American, don't do drugs. That's a cold thing to say to somebody who's living through that perspective, you know, living literally behind bars, not for committing a crime, not for doing anything wrong, just for not being poor.
But even then, the exhibit highlights success stories as well. Stories like Andre's.
This is Andre. Andre is 14 years old. He took the pre-prep for the SAT and got a perfect score. He has straight A's and B's on his report card. We just learned about his pre-prep for the SAT, so that was really cool. His mother lived here.
On the right side of Andre's photo, there's a copy of his image, but with a black ski mask colored in over his face.
And so the thing here, what I did with the image was to try to find a way that I could show, what do we see when we see young black boys? You know, and I think more than we see this image of him in the ski mask. And I wanted to, you know, challenge people around that.
Life also wanted to challenge people to consider the important role housing can play in the course of people's lives.
You know, a lot of our conversations across the country, our social welfare conversations are going into marriage rights, into education, into getting, you know, hormones out of the food. But I want to make sure that we're still remembering the fundamental things that make a human well, which is food, shelter, and clothing.
The Greenside building will be demolished 1 month after Brighter Than Blight closes. The plan is for something to go up in its place that would provide another basic element to good health, food.
They're going to put an urban farm here. You know, another issue in East Oakland is that you have to drive 20 minutes to get a grape.
These are issues Ice Life faced when he was just Isaac Brown. And most of the tenants of places like Greenside have faced them too. They continue to face them. One art installation or the demolition of a blighted building doesn't change that. But it does make space for something new. For Cross Currents, I'm Audrey Dilling.
Brighter Than Blight is open for one last weekend, this Friday through Sunday from 4 to 9 p.m. each day. It's free. Find more information about it at our website. It's kalw.org. Now it's time to reveal our audiograph sound of the week. All week long on KALW, we've been playing it for you. We asked you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. We sent KALW's Tiffany Kamhide to Oakland to bring you the answer.
My name is Kevin Jones. I'm a recreation aide at Lake Merritt Boating Center.
Hold the boat!
What does Lake Merritt mean to you?
I just love being out on the water, getting to view the lake. It brings up a lot of memories. I used to come around here with my dad when I used to live in the area. And just seeing a lot of crazy stuff, like people falling in boats and stuff. And
so do the wildlife, do the geese ever get in the way of the boaters?
No, I think we get in their way a lot. I don't know. Yeah, they're characters. They should watch for their coop, I guess, if I could say that. I like them. It's characteristic of Lake Merritt. Whenever you think of it, you think of the bird.
I'm James Robinson. I teach sailing here. I also come up with program curriculums. And I also work for the Lake Merritt Institute, which goes around and educates the public on urban runoff.
Any of the boaters complain about the geese, or do you have any complaints about the geese?
We have a lot of complaints about the geese. At one point, someone suggested us getting this service called the Goose Busters, where these little dogs run around and harass the geese until they fly off. But since this is the oldest wildlife refuge in North America, Stephanie at the Rotary Nature Center was having no part of that.
So my name is Stephanie Benavides. I'm the supervising naturalist for the city of Oakland. This wildlife refuge, through no fault of its own, had a city built around it and urban sprawl. And so part of the problem is trying to balance the wildlife refuge with recreational needs of the public. During the migratory season, which is right now the summer season, they migrate here and they molt. That's why you see the guys sweeping. There's a lot of feathers on the ground. And so they're land bound between 4 to 6 weeks, you can see all these feathers, to renew their flight feathers.
How many would you say are here now?
We get up to 1,000.
Is that just during the summer months?
During the summer months, yeah. Probably a complement of 300 in the off season. Yeah, a lot of people think they're obnoxious, but, you know, on a good day, this park will still be filled, and it'll still have people out on the lawn.
Oh, that's the amazing part. That's kind of like I didn't touch on that because it's obvious, but the wildlife is amazing. You can come down, sometimes see birds hunting fish on the side. You can see the pelicans that just come through on their migratory journey. It's amazing. Fish, birds. Hey, bring a sandwich. You got a whole day.
I just saw that one bite that other one.
Yes, they did.
We got a lot of calls on this one, but we can only have one winner. You know who you are. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, Audiograph is taking a summer vacation. We'll be back with a new sound in mid-July. In the meantime, we'd love it if you'd call our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And tell us where you think we should record next. That does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's team includes Julie Kane, Tiffany Kamhai, Lisa Carmack, Marco Choi, Ben DeLuca, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Teddy Lederer, Daphne Matsuyaraki, Megan Quintana, Christian Rose, Leah Rose, Stephen Short, Ben Vu, and Brooke Welty. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we're listener-supported radio.
What do you dream about when you're drifting away?
The singing and piano playing you're hearing comes from Brad Brooks of San Francisco. He's performing Sunday at Café du Nord on Upper Market Street in his hometown, where he joins the Shook Twins, who are not from there. They're from Portland. Music begins around 7:30 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.